Want a recipe for success? Step one, visit OCDFamilyPodcast.com/courses. Step two, click on my link to browse OCD Training School's amazing course catalog. Step three, enroll. And step four, enjoy learning. With no added cost to you, you can support the OCD family community while grabbing some continuing education or learning how to bridge yourself to self-help strategies for OCD. Again, that's OCDFamilyPodcast.com/courses. And use my special link to sign up today.
Hello, hello, OCD family community. And welcome back to our final week of OCD Awareness Month, where we're discussing our fourth cornerstone of OCD awareness, advocacy, with the one and only Stuart Ralph. So get cozy, because not only are we getting to hear about Stuart's personal journey with OCD, but we're learning how he turned his experience into one of the top-rated OCD podcasts that helps bring hope and healing to people all over the world. So settle in, fam, because you won't want to miss this.
I'm Nicole Morris, licensed marriage and family therapist and mental health correspondent. And let me be the first to say, welcome to the family, the OCD family, that is. I am here to create a community of support for family members, spouses, partners, parents, adult children, as there may be adult words, and chosen family of OCD sufferers and their community. I've had over 22 years of experience in the mental health field, but please note that this information does not qualify or substitute as a diagnostic evaluation, therapy, or treatment, and it is presented on an as-is basis. Please follow up with a qualified mental health provider in your area regarding concerns for yourself or loved ones. Thank you for joining us today. Now, let's get started.
Alrighty, fam. Wow, what a fun and amazing month we've had discussing OCD awareness. For any new fam going, girl, we just showed up to this party. What are you talking about, boo? No worries, I've got you. Because we are chatting about the four cornerstones of OCD awareness, at least from my hot take, which includes medication, lived experience, research, and advocacy. So if you're curious and want to learn more about any of these recent episodes, check out OCDFamilyPodcast.com or listen wherever you enjoy your podcasts and YouTube. But this has been a really fun and informative month, so I want to take another quick minute to just thank all of the amazing guests we've had. We really appreciate your time, your lived experience, and your expertise. Also, fam, speaking of amazing programming, next week kicks off my third annual OCRD series, which stands for OCD-related disorders. And I've got another stellar lineup for you guys where we're discussing and highlighting some really important disorders that tend to get grouped with or fall under the umbrella of OCD by the diagnostic powers that be. But they really are separate and different animals in how they function. So the good news is if you hang with the OCD crew, there's often support for our OCRD warriors and families. In fact, if you've been to a recent international OCD conference, there's even different tracks, some for body-focused repetitive behaviors or hoarding or body dysmorphic disorder. But there's not nearly enough information and support. I mean, we know this is the case even for OCD. So many people are out there suffering, undiagnosed, or starving for resources. But y'all, OCD is our lead ingenue in this spotlight. So what does that mean for our OCRD warriors? They deserve better. So I try to take this time every season to run my OCRD series, as well as spotlighting throughout my catalog of shows to help support our OCRD warriors and families. Again, that kicks off next week with new episodes every Friday through all of November. And we're going to be covering some really interesting topics, fam, including body-focused repetitive behaviors, body dysmorphic disorder, emetophobia, digital hoarding, and obsessive-compulsive personality disorder. So you want to check these episodes out. I found them all to be amazing. And I actually really, really appreciated learning more about digital hoarding, specifically with Dr. Nick Neve out of the UK, because I think this is a much bigger problem than many people realize and something that many of us don't even think about when it comes to the cloud or the internet or how data gets collected and stored. It can really easily become out of sight, out of mind until there's a dysfunction, if you will. A challenge, we're out of phone storage, everything's slowing down, and even environmental impacts from how we use or don't disregard data. So there are a lot of really interesting aspects to all of these OCRD discussions, and the guests are top-notch. So you'll definitely want to join us. Also, just a quick housekeeping note. Maybe I'll even throw up a poll over the next month or so over on my social. But I am updating my swoosh, fam. And for some of y'all, you might be like, you're what? What's a swoosh? But this is the sound that helps to signal and move us through some of the transitions of the show. It's one of those things that some of you may have never noticed running in the background of any of these episodes. But for some of you, fam, you've really noticed them. So I've heard feedback over the seasons, particularly from a sensory perspective, that this sound is dysregulating or jarring for some. And fam, while I know we're all unique people, and while certain sounds may annoy one person or be experienced as painful, it may mean nothing for another. But here's the deal. All of this work that I do to create this space for us to have these chitty chats is so that we can know we're not alone. And we know that OCD doesn't discriminate. So I want to make this the most welcoming and inclusive hangout that I can, because everyone deserves to be included here. We are about hope for all, not for some. So if I can make a little change here that makes it so much easier for people to access this content, I'm going to try. So I'm rolling out a new swoosh this week, or whoosh. It can go by many names, but does not a rose by any other name still smell as sweet? Right, well. And so I'm trialing it out, but I know that particularly for some of our neurodivergent fam, having that heads up and an idea of what to expect or where to expect it can be really helpful. So I wanted to point it out as well. So starting with season 3, I've limited the use of these transitions to just the time we're going from my introduction space this time, in fact, into our main conversation, the interview portion of the show. And then at the very end of the interview portion, as we transition into my intrusive thoughts segment, which is a recurring segment every episode, those are the two times every single show where that transition will show up. So if you're new to the fam and you go back and listen to any of the prior episodes from this season, season 3, that's going to be the case. The only difference is prior to this episode, it's a different swoosh effect. For seasons 1 and 2, however, swooshes were used to help break up the main content of our interviews and conversations. So if you were to imagine reading a blog, for example, and you might have different main points and supporting points, and they're broken up into different paragraphs, swooshes were a way to help provide guidance in those different points of discussion. So just know, if you're newer to the fam and you do find certain noises to be dysregulating, season 1 and 2 are going to have more of those swoosh sounds. And then season 3, it starts just at the beginning and the end of the main content. So hopefully providing this informed consent can help folks anticipate or plan for any accommodations needed when those swoosh sounds are coming up. I'll also just note that all of my summer programming, the water cooler chats, which are short form content animated with Legos, because I am really gifted at making easier things harder than they need to be, none of the water cooler chats have the whoosh swoosh sound effect that I can recall. So if you're heading back to hear a water cooler chat, you should be in a swoosh free zone. Okay? It's like if you were coming over into my house, fam, and I have a dog and you didn't like dogs, or maybe had a fear of dogs or an allergy. I wouldn't be like, here, but hold my dog. And surprise, he'll never know when the dog is going to show up. So we'll see how this goes. We'll give it some time to really test it out. But I'll see if the new swoosh sound is landing a little better, is a little easier on the ears, and we'll see how this goes. But that is all the housework we have for now, fam, because I want to tell you guys more about today's special guest, Mr. Stuart Ralph, psychotherapist and host of the OCD Stories podcast. Now, for many of you, I know Stuart needs no introduction because of the incredible work he's done in the advocacy space for bringing more hope and healing to OCD warriors. But in the event that you're very new to the OCD world, maybe just even new to this diagnosis, and you're just starting to understand the monster that is OCD, let me just catch you up to speed on all things Stuart. So Stuart is a counselor and a psychotherapist who is MBACP accredited for children and young people in the UK. He is the co-founder of the Integrative Center for OCD Therapy And he founded the OCD Stories podcast, a weekly podcast where he interviews some of the best minds in OCD recovery. And in 2018, he was given the Hero Award from the International OCD Foundation, which is a huge, huge honor. At this point, Stuart has over 450 episodes published, which, to give you context, fam, I've been doing this every week for, gosh, we're going into my third year here, and I'm only on episode 112. So, Stuart, this man has invested so much time and heart into this work, and we are all better for it. So today we're going to be chatting about Stuart's story, his advocacy work, and what advocacy can look like for you or your loved ones, fam. But first, I just want to give you a real brief trigger warning that we are going to be chatting briefly about Stuart's history of suicidal ideation. We don't go much further into it than that, but I realize that it is a triggering subject for some of our family, so please proceed with discretion. And with that, fam, let's dive in, because there's lots to discuss. Well, welcome back to the OCD Family Podcast, and I am so excited today because I have a new friend. We're now hanging out for the last couple weeks, and I have Mr. Stuart Ralph of the OCD Stories, also a psychotherapist in the UK. Welcome to the OCD Family Community.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on. It's good to be here.
Yes. Well, thank you for taking some time in a long day just to come hang out with the fam, because we here in OCD Awareness Month have been featuring, as the fam is aware, different aspects of bringing awareness. And Stuart, you have done incredible advocacy, especially with building your podcast, The OCD Stories. And so first off, I would love to hear, how did you come to formulate the podcast? Like, how did you first have OCD kind of come to the awareness?
Yeah, well, OCD came to me when I was seven. I was actually in America in my first OCD memory. So yeah, obviously, as I live in the UK, as you know, and we were on holiday when I was seven, and I just started getting intrusive images, not knowing what they were, not knowing what anxiety was at the time. But now looking back, it was clearly anxiety. It felt more like a premonition I was having than an intrusive thought. I now know it's an intrusive thought. But at the time, my young brain thought this was, I'm seeing the future. Right. Something bad's going to happen. I could prevent this from happening to my dad. You know, if I don't say something bad's going to happen. He's going to die. It's going to be all my fault. I didn't say anything because there was also a little part of me that said, no, this can't be real. There's something not quite right here. Anyway, so throughout that holiday, lots of intrusive thoughts. And it kind of just spiraled from there throughout my teen years, young adulthood. Got help in my mid to late 20s, suffered for quite a while. So that was really the motivation for me being a therapist, specifically working with children and young people, because, you know, I want to be what I needed at 7, 8, 9, 10 years old, you know, or 14, 15, 16. So that's my motivation and motivation for children. And then the podcast was 2015, however old I was then, 28 maybe, and just sitting on the edge of my bed, completely in the depths of my OCD, thinking, well, if my life's going to suck, then someone else might as well benefit from my pain. Yeah. That was my thinking.
Yeah.
And then I did the podcast, and that was also really healing for me, because I got to interview, as you know, lots of cool people and get lots of advice off those people free of charge.
Right.
And exactly. And then as it started to grow and people listened, that motivated me because, okay, people are listening now. Hopefully it's helping them. And that's what keeps me going to this day, 9 years on. Sometimes I want to quit because I'm like, oh, life would be simpler without the podcast. But then I'm like, no, I do enjoy it, the conversations, and knowing that people listen and it helps them is kind of what pushes me through.
Yeah, the conversations for sure are the coolest part of this job. It's all the work around the conversations that can also kind of bog down sometimes. But one of the biggest privileges is obviously getting to hear these stories, talk with cool researchers, talk with all these warriors and families that are just working through the muck that OCD slings at us. And so when you started therapy, if you don't mind my asking, and to the extent that you feel comfortable, but when you started therapy, was your therapist or whoever was diagnosing able to classify it correctly as OCD, or did it start out in a different space? Because a lot of times OCD can get missed by providers. Yeah. And so I'm just curious, were they like on the right track with that or did they miss it for you?
Yeah. So, you know, in the UK, we have the National Health Service. And when I was about 16 or 17, so around 2002-ish, maybe 2003, I went without my parents knowing at that point, because still living in shame, not wanting to talk about it, hadn't opened up. Again, mental health, it's not that long ago, 20 years, but it really wasn't talked about 20 years ago. It's really been the last 10 years. So there was a lot of shame. And so I went to the National Health Service. I had two sessions, one with a psychiatrist, one with a psychologist. And I remember it kind of ended with, look, you know, it could be OCD, because I came to them, I think this is OCD. And they said, look, it could be this, but look, go away, read these self-help books on OCD. If that doesn't help, then come back and we can try and get you a CBT therapist. And I was like, well, at that point, the only book I'd ever read was The Philosopher's Stone, you know, the first Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Which is a great book.
It is a great book.
Exactly. So the first book I'd only read for fun. All the other books were past school, whatever. And even then, I didn't like doing it. Academically, I was quite challenged as a kid, which I think OCD affected. So anyway, obviously, I didn't read the books. I got the books, didn't read them, suffered for about another nearly 10 years. And at that point, I was like, screw this. I'm just going to go private, paid out of pocket. And the rest is history, so to speak. It was a bit of a windy journey still because I went to a therapist at that point. I didn't need a diagnosis. The therapist just had to think that this is OCD. And
yeah.
But then I requested my notes like around that time, maybe a couple of years after that, when I started training as a therapist, I requested my notes from those initial two sessions when I was 17. And I was like, okay, well, you know, an OCD outcome measure wasn't done, such as the Y box. In the notes, it was like, mild OCD ? And I'm thinking now, well, even if it was mild,
worth treating, right?
Yes. Anything above subclinical is torture, you know, and that's how I treat my clients. I don't care if I think it's severe or not. If it's bothering them, that's all that matters to me. So there was a few mistakes they made, and they weren't OCD experts by any means. So, you know, it is what it is. They made a couple other mistakes that I won't bring up. But in a way, if I got a diagnosis and had treatment at that point, my podcast wouldn't exist. Your podcast probably would exist. And mine wouldn't exist.
Yeah.
So in some way, would I change it? I suffered a lot, but I kind of like where I am and I wouldn't want to affect that right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you are doing what you can to raise a voice to the concerns and really even championing the process, the treatment for other people so that they don't have to live, like you just said, for your own clients, they don't have to live with mild OCD. Because yes, mild might as well be, you know, the worst, because it is still, again, even at a subclinical level, can cause distress. Absolutely. Right. But I think part of the problem is so many people don't know what OCD is. They have this idea that it's just about hand washing. It can include hand washing. And hand washing in and of itself isn't OCD. Hand washing has to function as a compulsion to a obsessional doubt or to an intrusive thought. And so, yeah, it is problematic, the lack of knowledge. It's changing. The landscape is changing. Yeah. But it's also got a long way to go.
Yeah. And I think, you know, as we talk at that point, the only reason I thought it was OCD when I was 17 was because in the early days of the internet, I think I must have landed on one of the British, or maybe it was the ISDF. I think it was one of the British charities. And I just saw a webpage and I was like, that is me. Every single thing, like that's OCD. And so many of my guests, I'm sure yours, have said the same sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And I remember I look back when those initial assessments, I barely told them anything about what I now understand to be OCD. Because at that point, I didn't know what OCD was in depth.
Right.
You know, I didn't share that 3 years prior, I was like really suicidal and thinking about it. I didn't share sort of BDD or I just went in with one aspect to the OCD I remember talking about. So with better understanding of OCD and better questioning, they would have pulled that out of me, but it didn't come out because I wasn't aware it needed to come out. You know, I didn't think that was anything to do with OCD.
And to be fair, it wasn't your job to know that.
No.
You were coming in suffering. It was their job to know what they needed to do. And again, it may sound like I'm shading practitioners, but I will say I was in the field 20 years before I correctly noticed OCD. Because as I have shared many times with this community, and may have even shared with your community, I had a client referred to me that, you know, tongue-in-cheek joke is that they were dealing with it in such a manifestation that even I couldn't miss it because I missed it, sadly, for so long. And so I'm not shading the other practitioners. It's not taught thoroughly unless you, like,
no, it's not.
Go to college across from a Rogers, which here in the U.S. is a very common OCD treatment facility for higher levels of care. Or unless you go to Baylor and you're in Storch's lab or you're working with Dr. Caitlin Pinciotti and things like that, you're aware of OCD so much. And so that's part of where this awareness, this advocacy work means so much. So then you learned it was OCD. You started with a private therapist some 10 years later. And I'm curious, did that therapist start with basic CBT? Did they start with something like exposure and response prevention or what we call ERP? Or did you start with ACT? Because I know that you're also a big proponent of ACT, and ACT being acceptance and commitment therapy for any of our newer fam joining. But would love to know kind of what that treatment journey started like.
Yeah, so the initial therapist I saw was actually much more cognitive, which was useful. She started getting me thinking about OCD and the patterns of it, and it was very, very cognitive. And then, went more ACT. ACT was some ERP, and ACT was a really big proponent of me. I did obviously ERP, but ACT was huge in terms of really starting to see thoughts as just thoughts, get that diffusion from them, engage in life. I would say ACT was really the game changer for me. And again, not downplaying the role ERP has had in my life and continues to have, but ACT changed the way I was approaching suffering and thoughts and feelings.
Yeah. So you started to learn about ACT. And again, if you're newer listening, and we're not going to go super in depth, but I do want to help people understand. You talked a little bit about like thoughts are just thoughts. Cognitive diffusion, but can you, I guess, give your elevator pitch more or less for fam that is like, you know what? I don't know a ton about ACT, or maybe ACT is integrated with my ERP or my ICBT being inference-based CBT, but I'm not sure what exactly that means. Can you help listeners understand what that looks like?
Yeah. So I like to think, I don't think I came up with this, but I don't know who did if someone did. So I'll say it and you can credit to me if you want. The disorder is in the struggle is how I view OCD. So OCD sticks around because we wrestle with it. We struggle against it. We push away thoughts and feelings. We don't want it. So I like to think that the struggle makes the disorder, or at least maintains the disorder. Mm-hmm. And with ACT, for me, it's all about dropping the struggle. Mm-hmm. And ACT talks about the key goal of ACT is psychological flexibility. And Stephen Hayes, the founder, one of the founders of ACT, likes to talk about, I think he did in his TED talk, sort of, we need to take a break before you have a mental break. But if you imagine like your legs, your muscles, ligaments, they're really stiff. And if they're stiff and then you suddenly try and sprint from standing and you're not warm, you might pull your ACL, your MCL, all of the different ligaments, or tear a muscle. And it's the same way with the brain. If our brain isn't flexible, it's not literally tearing, but mentally we get those kind of breakdowns. And I think ACT teaches us to be psychologically flexible to deal with life's stuff. And in the context of OCD, the acceptance part of ACT is very much making space for thoughts and feelings that I'm having these thoughts and feelings. I don't have to agree what the OCD is telling me, of course not, but just that my brain is telling me that the door handle is contaminated or I'm going to hurt some kid, or it's just there's another thought that my brain is giving me. And allowing it to be there. And of course, with OCD, we don't allow it to be there. We're like, get rid of this. I can't think this. Because even if I think it, I'm a bad person. No, you're not. You're just a person with a brain.
Yeah.
We get weird, funky thoughts. That's okay.
Right.
So it teaches skills to gradually make space for these thoughts and feelings, allow them to be there, drop the struggle, diffuse, which is get distance from the thoughts and feelings. So meditation, they might call it like becoming the watcher or the observer of your mind. So I do like notice and naming a lot with clients of like, first you got to notice you're having the intrusive thought, then name it. Oh, there's that worry again. There's OCD again. There's that thought about me harming someone. And that diffusion, that distance can then help. It doesn't get rid of it, but it gets enough of a distance so we don't get hooked and pulled into the OCD. Mm-hmm. And then also there's mindfulness component of ACT, and then it's engaging in committed action to values and something that matters to you, which you could call distraction, but it's distraction in service of living your life, and life of meaning and purpose, and bringing these thoughts and feelings with you along for the ride. And eventually they'll go.
Yeah. And it's such a great point. I like how you say that in service. One of the things that we talk about in this community a lot, and I'm sure you do as well, is it's important to know the function of something. And so a lot of things are inherently bad, and OCD loves some good black and white thinking, right? And so not all things are just explicitly bad, you know, hand washing explicitly bad, certain engagement or distraction explicitly bad. It has to function, it has to serve in that way, but can also function and serve in productive ways. And so learning about that is, I think, really important. And it's hard when you have OCD because the intensity in which you're experiencing things, and I know family listening is like, yes, I've seen this for my warriors, I've seen this, or maybe you have lived experience, you've experienced it. Stuart's been open about his experience. I have lived experience. So you're in good company, fam. We get you. But yeah, it's interesting. And because, again, we're doing OCD awareness, I love that we're having conversations about these different treatment models. It reminded me a little bit, yet different. So kind of a Venn diagram. There's an overlap here. And I'm sure that you've had a chat with Dr. Michael Greenberg. He does rumination-focused ERP. And again, ERP being exposure and response prevention. Something that he talks about is, yes, we can have awareness, but whether we engage, and that's kind of where I'm seeing that overlap, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The struggle is the disorder. It reminds me very much of if we're engaging or not. Now, from my understanding of Dr. Greenberg, is that it's not even about distance or diffusion. We can choose to not engage, which most people listening, I've never heard of rumination focus at ERP. Trust me, it's interesting and worth learning about.
Yeah.
But for many of us, we're like, well, if I could just not, that would be awesome. I wouldn't be here. I wouldn't be the disordered struggle, right? And so there's certainly differences between ACT and RF ERP, but it kind of reminded me of that. And it makes me wonder, because I'm sure, have you had him on the show?
Yeah, about four times. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I love Michael, actually.
He's great.
He's really fun. And he's so warm and open, in my opinion, to share about what he means to clarify. And so all of that is really interesting. But I love what you're saying about that. And so for ACT, if people wanted to learn more about ACT, do you have some go-to resources? I'd be happy to link them over on this episode's blog at OCDFamilyPodcast.com in terms of learning more about that, even as a standalone treatment option, because often we hear it infused with ERP, but it can be a standalone option as well.
Yeah, I would say if you want to just dip your toes into ACT, Dr. Russ Harris, he wrote a book called The Happiness Trap. And particularly, I'm looking up at my bookshelf, it's the second edition, but I think they might call it the new edition on Amazon. At least in the UK, it's got a birdcage, I think, on it. If that's wrong, I'll let you know.
Okay.
If I don't let you know, then that's right. But it might be different in the US, obviously. But yeah, it's the second or new edition, because he dramatically updated the book and he breaks down lots of exercises. So it's not specifically for OCD, but I don't think it needs to be. Mm-hmm. I think it really breaks down ACT in a really great way. And he puts lots of skills I use, dropping anchor, dipping in and out of the stream, kind hands or kind touch, which is a compassion-based exercise. Urge surfing is a great skill. So he's got a whole chapter on rumination and worrying, which he kind of wrote in the new edition specifically for OCD, I think. So a lot of the skills in that are great and you can practice it. So I think that's the most accessible book I've found for understanding ACT.
Yeah, I love that. Thank you. Okay, so we're talking a little bit here, fam, about some of the treatment options, some of where you started, Stuart, started in a more cognitive space. I'm guessing it wasn't specifically something like inference-based cognitive behavioral therapy, but more of a generalized.
Old school CBT.
Yes, CBT. Yeah. Which for anybody that isn't zoomed into the therapy world here are these different evidence-based practices. You might be like, I've heard of this, or psychoanalysis or things like that. I don't even know what it is. But CBT talks about the relationship between feelings, thoughts, behaviors, how that can impact our actions, et cetera. And so the idea is, if we think of it kind of almost as a triangle, that if we kind of target one thing in the triangle, that affects the entire triangle. But different people are going to respond to different things, and we don't have cures for OCD. And so we have different treatment options, and I love that. So you went on and you started therapy privately. You were working and moved into ACT, and that really resonated with you. And then you came to create the podcast, you said, in 2015?
Yeah.
Okay. And so you have done a lot of work, not only in building the podcast, but also you have an OCD camp. You're a therapist yourself that has a heart for especially that youth population where you were when this journey started and really could have used that support. And so we'd love to hear more about the evolution of when did the camp start? When did that idea start? Was it at the same time as the podcast? I can only imagine how many directions you felt pulled in there.
Yeah, so the camp was 2018 was the first one I started, May 2018.
Yeah.
But I started planning it more than a year in advance, I think, because when I had Pete Weiss, it was Dr. Pete Weiss now, because he's since done a psychological doctorate. But I had him on the podcast in early 2016. I think he was maybe even the 12th episode or something.
Uh-huh.
And he was on the documentary Extreme OCD Camp, which is a terrible name. He didn't choose the name. That was just what the documentary crew decided to name it. But it's my favorite OCD documentary. Is it very much focuses on therapy and exposure in particular in a wilderness setting. And he takes six British teens. They were like almost 20 though, into the wilderness for a week. And they run that much more like an actual treatment experience. They were trying to help these kids get better over a week. Whereas when him and Travis have stopped the camp now in the States, they did it for like 15 years. But I think when they actually did it in the States, it was way less exposure-based. That was more for the TV crew. So I run it much more like how he normally runs it, not like the documentary. And anyway, he said, look, if you ever want to run one in the UK, just let me know. And like, I don't know, 8 months later, I reached out to him and said, you know, are you serious? And he said, yeah, you know, and he told me everything I needed to know. On his own money, he flew over. I mean, I gave him a small amount of money to his flight, but, you know, he'd lost a whole week worth of clients because he was over helping me with the camp and setting it up. And so in credit to him, and done 5 camps now. I've organized 7, but COVID blocked me on 2 of them.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It was incredibly frustrating and that was a huge waste of my time and sad I couldn't, you know, do those. But 5 camps is awesome. And now Johnny, the co-founder of our center, he runs it with me now. So I've got a bit of help. The camp, which is good, but it's awesome. It's just 3 days in the woods in England, a chance to do various sort of survival activities. We do bits of exposure. We teach acceptance and commitment therapy skills. We do some compassion focused therapy. It's not therapy, the camp, but we have therapy elements in.
Yeah.
The biggest aspect of it is the 2 evenings where the first evening both evenings around the campfire, like sharing stories. I always keep the second night a secret. So I won't reveal what that is, but it's really cathartic. And people come away a couple of the years, they still meet up to go on holiday together and hang out, and they're in WhatsApp groups together. And so the community they build in only 48 hours over 3 days is just incredible to see. It's always my professional highlight each year.
Yeah, yeah. Campfires, it's interesting. Yeah. I mean, campfires are just notorious for... I think there's a couple of conceptualizations, super vulnerable or scary ghost stories.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And, you know, the irony, I just came up with this in this moment, but the irony is with OCD, a lot of these are scary ghost stories. They're the haunting ideas behind these intrusive thoughts that feel so real, that feel so dire, that feel so urgent. And we learn that that's what they are, though. They're stories, they're a thought, that's where they begin and where they end. And so in a way, they're all the same, I guess, these campfire stories. It's really cool, though. I love
the way I look at it.
Yeah. And, you know, you mentioned, too, and I will second this, the colleagues. And of course, not everyone coming on the podcast is a colleague or a researcher, but the colleagues in our field that have already established different programs have been so generous in coming and sharing information really freely, so that people can benefit. And it's part of that awareness campaign. It's a lot of work for people like you and I to be able to organize and generate and sustain all of this, but we couldn't do it in a vacuum without people being so generous of their time and giving whether that's the person with lived experience or whether it's in reference to this camp, one of the originators going, hey, yeah, I'll kind of help you set it up. And now it's running and it's sustainable to run on its own through your center. And so I love that. I love that. And so I'm going to, again, have links to everything to Stewart's center. And I'm guessing that this is going to continue to be an ongoing thing now post-pandemic.
Yeah. Yeah.
If people are interested in learning about the camp, but I know here in the States too, there are some different camps that get set up. And I know Kim Vicente at Jack MHA is doing amazing work to try and build and bring more camps to more communities for even younger kiddos. So what is the age range of campers that typically go on your excursions?
Yeah. So though I'm a child and adolescent therapist, there's just too many rules and regulations for me that I couldn't be bothered to deal with in the UK around children and safeguarding. And
you're right.
It's on my list to do. I just haven't got around to it. So adults, and it's the only adult work I do, the camp. So that's a nice little change for me.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's 18 and over. And we've had the oldest member of the camp we've had was 62.
Oh, that's great.
So, and what's amazing is you find that you could have an 18-year-old and a 62-year-old, and by the end of the camp, you can't tell the difference in age. They just get on so well that age isn't a barrier. It's awesome to see.
Well, and I hope for anyone listening that maybe it's you, maybe it's your parent, maybe it's your adult child, and you think, gosh, in hindsight, we can look back and maybe even see signs of this when they were 7 years old. Does that mean like it's too late for them? They've already missed out 50 some odd years of their life? And the answer is no.
No.
There's still relief and hope available. And I love that the 62-year-old was like, hey, my life's worth it. My relief is worth it, and chose to participate. I think that's a beautiful thing. And I think it's inspiring too, I would imagine, for other campers that are like, okay, if he can do it, I can do it. I'm going to try. I'm going to be here for it. And then you build these, I'm sure, incredible bonds.
Yeah, exactly that. And speaking of age, like nothing to do with my camp, and I won't give too much away, but I remember someone I know through various advocacy I've done, they were saying that they knew an 84-year-old that had decided to finally get therapy and had started doing ERP, and this 84-year-old was like doing all the exposures and doing really well and really going for it, like head first into it. And I think that's just really inspiring of, you know, you could be in your 80s, 90s and just do it. And then if it helps you, you get some more years where the OCD is a bit less. And what an experience that is if you've lived your whole life with OCD.
Right. Yeah, I'm going to read it to you because I saw the sign out in the wild the other day and I was like, I'm going to take a picture of it. And so I'm going to pull it up. And it made me think of this because there's no age too young or old for this to apply. Let's see. It says, fear doesn't stop death. It stops life.
Mm.
And so even at 84, you're living, right?
Yep,
and fear, 100%. Especially when it comes to OCD, so many people are living in fear. And OCD can be more than fear. It can also be disgust. The intrusion and the distrust can manifest in different ways. But I would say a very significant portion, even for disgust folks, is the fear that that disgust feeling might never leave, right? And so there's usually some fear trapped in that. And so OCD, if it had a mantra for being the dumpster fire it is that through doing the different compulsions or avoidance, you might, maybe, could possibly survive this. If not, no, you're definitely screwed, right? And so your world shrinks and it gets so small. And then to be able to realize, like, actually, it's the cliche phrase, but the only thing to fear is fear itself. Like, yeah, the fear in and of itself isn't going to harm you, but it can limit you from experiencing life fully. And so being able to face that is really what's life-giving. But it's so hard.
Yeah. Yeah, it is so hard. And I think that that's the ironic thing or cruel thing about OCD is it sells you on this lie that I'm protecting you from doing something horrible or something horrible happening to you. But the whole time, it's doing something horrible to you, which is taking away the quality of your life and opportunities and satisfaction and hope. And
yeah.
So the bad thing you're worried about is already happening, just in a different form.
Right. In inference-based CBT, one of the analogies we use quite a bit is something we refer to as the OCD bubble. And the idea is if you do all these things, this bubble will protect you. And then you start to realize that this bubble is what's cutting me off from my life. I am trapped in this enclosed prison that I thought was saving me, that I thought was going to help me survive or keep from harming somebody else that I care and love. And now I'm realizing, actually, I am in a cage of my own compulsions here in this bubble. And so realizing, actually, we can pop out of this bubble and get back into right now life that's happening right now is such a powerful experience. And so there are a number of different ways that people can find recovery, hope, peace, and, you know, inference-based CBT, ACT, ERP, metacognitive therapy. I even will infuse some dialectical behavioral therapy, which for new fam that is catching us during OCD Awareness Month, you might be like, all the letters. I don't know what any of it means. But all that means is there are some options available for people.
Yeah.
So can I ask you, Stuart, in the process of you described coming up and dreaming up the podcast and you were sitting, I think you sat on the edge of your bed going, okay, if life is going to suck, then I'm going to share this. Yeah. Maybe this can help somebody else. It sounds like OCD was still raging intensely. And how has that process been as becoming a therapist, doing these amazing camps and doing the podcast? Have you found it to be triggering? Does it depend? I'm going to guess there's probably wavelengths of intensity. But how has that been with your own lived experience trying to manage these different services and live your own life fighting your own OCD?
Yeah, well, I'd say, after I made that decision and started the podcast, the following 18 months, I made a lot of progress, I think. So I started to regain some quality of life and balance. And it was still there, but it was way more manageable. It wasn't sort of torturing me as much.
Not so loud.
Yeah, exactly. And then it started to get much better. And then about 3 years ago now, it wasn't so much OCD. It was more sort of panic disorder or worrying about panic disorder.
Right.
And that was a big setback for me. That's the only sort of relapse I would say I've had that really kicked my ass, and it took me a while, even though I knew exactly what I needed to do to get better.
Mm-hmm.
It took me a while, but I did. I implemented it all and regained, and now it doesn't bother me. But yeah, you know, the relationship-based OCD was a huge thing for me in 2015. It's one of the two themes that was really tough for me. Now I'm obviously married, and honestly, relationship-based OCD, it's, I don't have it is the easiest way of saying it, you know?
Yes.
I still have OCD around some things here and there.
Yeah.
But my brain just doesn't go to relationship worries anymore because I face them in a big way, and my brain, I guess, knows it can't bother me in that way or help. Obviously, I think the brains are trying to help us, but I think I've told it enough through my behavior that my relationship's not an issue. And if it is, it has nothing to do with relationship OCD.
Yeah.
It's just something I need to work on.
Yeah. Relationship OCD is an interesting theme. I've had relationship OCD for sure, too. And it is interesting how certain themes can feel like they resolve, at least, you know, for a season, but sometimes ongoing, and other themes kind of pop up and morph. Because our brain, even if we're getting to a place where we're at a subclinical level, our brains are going to brain, right? We have the neurochemistry we have. It doesn't mean we can't change learning in the brain. But we're not changing our neurochemistry. And so we can have OCD challenges that still pop up. Mm. It's very different, though, when you're like, this is a nothing burger versus feeling completely swept into the tornado of doubt and concern and the spirals that abound in those situations. But yeah, relationship OCD, it's interesting because when I first started the OCD work, I conceptualized it one way. And then I've come to really, at least for myself and my client work, understand relationship OCD to be somewhat a manifestation of perfectionism OCD. Could there be a better or worse option? Did I make a mistake, or are they thinking they made a mistake? Or, you know, it can manifest in a lot of different ways, generally in partner focus or relationship focus themes. But I've learned for myself, at least, this comes a little bit down to FOMO of like, what if I got this wrong? And so it has been so interesting because once I was able to at least target that that's how ROCD was functioning for myself, it again, it did resolve, kind of wrap up a lot of this because it's like, oh, is there a more perfect option in the world? Yeah. And does that mean anything for this relationship? No, it's kind of irrelevant. to this relationship, because I can base this relationship based on the evidence I have in this actual relationship. It's not always going to be happy, and it's not always going to be perfect, and they're not always going to be great. And guess what? I'm not always great. So all of those things have been so fascinating in learning about ROCD, but I could imagine ACT being very, very helpful too in diffusing some of those different themes that come up.
Oh, 100%. And I always say my clients' relationship OCD, it's like, who do you want to be in the relationship? Put your energy there, because that's what you can control. You can't control whether you're getting anxious or having thoughts. You can be a good partner yourself. So, you know, focus on that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really, really interesting. So for people that may be listening, and for a season, you were a part of OCD Game Changers. You've certainly become a great resource. I recommend your podcast all the time. But I think a lot of times for people, once they feel some hope, some relief from the torture that OCD has been, a lot of people are like, what can I do? I need people to know that it doesn't have to be this way. In fact, when I was on your show, you asked a question, if you had a billboard, what would you put on it? And I said something akin to, it doesn't have to be this way. Right.
Yeah.
And so what I would ask you is, for someone interested, but maybe doesn't have a lot of bandwidth, doesn't have a lot of spoons to get involved, maybe is really still trying to battle in their own recovery, what would you suggest in terms of wanting to be able to give back to the community and do some advocacy work? But what's kind of a good realistic step into it? Like, how to get your feet wet without getting yourself so submerged that you're like, oh my God, I made a big mistake.
Yeah, you're right. It can definitely feel overwhelming. And especially if you have sort of a public profile, in terms of you create an Instagram account or something like that, you can get a lot of people who are suffering and in bad ways asking for help. And that can feel really overwhelming if you don't know how to set boundaries or signpost them on. That's definitely an issue I struggled with in the early days.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just worth sharing. You get the odd troll. That's always fun. So
actually
develop a thick skin.
Yes, you do.
Yeah, it will bring out my anger issues. But I think I always say, pick something that, you know, podcasting made sense for me because I'm not huge on video. I like just talking to people. I like long form, intimate conversations. Mm-hmm. Some people like video, you know, they like shorter stuff. Video can be long too, of course. Some people like posting graphics and they're good at compiling information, like OCD Laura Johnson. OCD Doodles UK. She does, you know, so she succinctly pulls information and puts it in these great little cute graphics that really resonate with people.
Yeah.
And then you don't have to create your own thing either, because some people don't want to do that. So it's like, you know, the OCD walks that the ISDF do, join one of those, contact your local ISDF affiliate and see if they need any help with anything. Maybe it's setting up an event or... I know, like in the UK, the two charities we have support lines people can call. You can volunteer on those support lines and you can say, well, I've only got 2 hours a week to do that. So do that. You name it. It's just, oh, going to support groups. Even if you feel you're in a good place, you can give back by helping those in the support group.
Yeah.
Starting a support group is one I always advocate for, because there's not enough support groups.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say even sometimes as simple as leaving a Reddit comment. That you know, gives actual information. Actually, there's treatment that can help. Or actually, facing this versus avoiding it could bring more relief. It doesn't have to be deep. You don't have to do all of that. And I'm not saying Reddit gets it all. The internet's going to internet, and it's not all a winner chicken dinner here. But it's a way. One thing I'm thinking about, too, is sometimes it's just living your life. Because the people, especially around you, are going to know how stifling and suffocating OCD was. And then they're going to see you living and they're going to go, what happened? Like, how? What? This is amazing. They're going to rally. They're going to cheer. They're going to go, oh my gosh, I'm noticing these changes. You living your life. Sometimes we think like advocacy has to look like being a pro at Instagram stories or having our own YouTube channel. And sometimes it's just like doing something I couldn't before. And then maybe going to a meetup or being at the library, and people are like, oh, do you like to come here? Actually, I could never come here. Now I can. And that's exciting. Mm. So just living your life even is a huge form of advocacy. So I think it makes such an impact. And you will have people reach out to you from across spans of your life and go, what changed for you? Because people are inspired. Your actions speak louder than words a lot of times too. And so I think it's powerful because a lot of people want and feel moved, and I love that. But also sometimes we get this idea that advocacy can only look a certain way. Some people might want to start a podcast. I'm not shading that, because obviously we
don't start.
Exactly.
And Jacobs.
He's joking. A little bit of truth in there in terms of it is a lot of work. But I think, and I'm not meaning this in a pejorative way by any means, but sometimes kind of sitting back and going, I could do that. Yeah, I could do that. You probably could. But do you have the bandwidth for it? Do you have the time? It does take an investment of mental energies, financial startup, whatever, all these different things. But it is an option. And whatever you choose to do, I love if you're in a space where you feel like you have choices, because that means that you're not suffocating from the torture of OCD. And so awareness can look a number of ways. I would say for anyone listening, if you have lived experience or a loved one with lived experience, if you haven't done therapy, I highly, highly recommend it. And yes, I'm a therapist and Suiso therapist. So yeah, take the bias as you will. But what I will say is it's made such a profound difference for me. If it was as simple as just getting the book and reading it, Stuart, you would have been done. You would have never gone out of pocket. You would have never gone to the new therapist, right? You would have had your self-help books and...
Fair to the books, I didn't read them,
yes.
So they may have helped me. Probably wouldn't have, but...
And I was talking with somebody, and I can't remember who it was. I think it was Alec Pollard, actually, because Alec Pollard has a great book. And earlier this season, talked with Alec Pollard about when a loved one is really struggling to engage in mental health treatment. It's not specific to OCD, but certainly inclusive. And I was talking with him about self-help books. And like, for example, John Grayson, who is a person, speaking of camps, will do a lot of these different engagement camps around the IOCDF conferences, does a lot of work, has done a lot of research, has written books. He has a book, Freedom from OCD, which is a self-help book. And I read it as a clinician. And I was like, what? It's so dense. It's not that it can't be self-help, but I'm telling you, if your brain's on fire and you're like, I feel like I can't afford therapy, and you crack open Freedom from OCD, which I have my bookshelf right now, chances are you're not going to be in the space to be able to absorb it. And so it's better than nothing, but I do recommend treatment too. And that's one of the biggest ways you can advocate for yourself. Advocacy can also be self-advocacy. And so even going, okay, I want to live better than this. I want to feel better. I deserve better than this crushing my soul here. So I'm going to figure out a way to seek services. And I think that is a really powerful thing. You mentioned the IOCDF walks. Do they do IOCDF walks over in the UK?
I'm going to say no. I have this vague feeling someone either asked me about that recently or I saw something, maybe they were trying to do one.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe they do, they might do, but they will be on the ISTF's website, right, if they do. I wouldn't be surprised in the next year or two, there probably will be one, if there isn't already one.
I would love to see that, because the I in IOCDF is international. So
yes,
just thinking out loud, not shy to our IOCDF, but there's a lot of US-based stuff going on there. So would love that. And as you mentioned, there are other charities like OCD UK. There's a number of charities around the world. I know OCD Australia is pretty active as well. But OCD does not discriminate. It's in every country and every continent, and perhaps even with the scientists down in Antarctica. So who knows? But, you know, save Antarctica, at the very least, it's on every continent, because OCD happens in the brain. Mental health happens in the brain. And you know what? It doesn't discriminate. And so we can use more I in our OCD advocacy, right? More of our international work. But you're doing great work over there in the UK. Phenomenal job with OCD Stories. So 5-year plan for you, Stuart. Looking ahead, where would you like to see things? Would you still like to be doing the podcast? Would you like to be running more camps and including the youth? Would you like to be writing a book, maybe? I don't know. What's on the docket for you?
Yeah, the book is one I'm waiting for it to come and hit me in the face. I'll never write one until I think I really have a burning idea that needs to be shared. And the camp,
Yeah.
I definitely would like to have one that involves probably teens more so than kids in the next few years. A big focus for me and my colleague Johnny is growing our centre, the Integrative Centre for OCD Therapy. A bit of a mouthful. So keep going with that. We're really trying to pride ourselves on how we train our therapists, keep them engaged, keep them happy, because then the clients are hopefully going to benefit from that.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, the podcast, it's one of those things I don't know. I could easily see myself doing it 5 years and I wouldn't be surprised if I stopped.
Yeah.
I think that's a minimum of a couple years away.
Yeah.
But who knows? It could be another 10. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll do it until the day I die, which will hopefully be at least another 80 years.
Yeah.
And I'll be 117 when I die. Maybe I'll retire when I'm 100 and then have 17 years of fun.
There you go. We got the bonus 100-year plan, so I like it.
Oh, you said five, yeah.
You're good. I love it. I love it.
Yeah, that's probably where my head's at. But the center, the podcast, keeping going, and in the center is where I'm trying to really think about. We want to do research at the center, so
yeah,
private research nearly doesn't exist. You know, it's just universities that do it, and I think that's a real shame.
Mm-hmm.
So at the minute, we're working through all our ethical protocols, so how do we do it ethically and safely and all of this, and once we've nailed that, then we'll start doing research with our clients' permission, obviously.
Yeah.
And hopefully start writing papers that get published and adding to the world that way.
Yeah, I love that. One of the things you asked me when we talked last for OCD stories, you said, what has been one of your favorite guests? And at the moment, I was like, oh my gosh, so many great to choose from. You've had so many episodes. Does one or two or maybe even a theme stick out in your mind of what's been a favorite to learn more about? It's a hard question, right?
It's a really hard question, yeah. I don't know, because it's that, I think I said on the episode, like, you don't want to, it's like saying pick a favorite kid, you know?
Uh-huh.
I don't know. I mean, look, Michael Greenberg comes to mind just because, you know, I consider him a friend. I've had him on a few times. I'm not saying I agree with everything he says because he doesn't like ACT and I obviously do, but that's okay. I don't care that he doesn't like ACT. I still appreciate his ideas and I just like the way he thinks. Whether I agree with his ideas or not, I like the way he thinks and he really cares.
He does.
Obviously, I had Dr. Stephen Phillipson on a ton.
Yeah, for always Piro kind chat. Of t-
exactly.
Chatter. Yeah.
Yeah, always great to chat with Steve. And then my co-founder, Johnny Say, the reason we get on so well is our therapy approach really aligns from day one. I've known him for like 6-7 years. So I always enjoy chatting with him. And of course, I enjoyed our episode, which...
Well, thanks. And that's not just because I'm sitting here, I'm sure.
But, and I think for anyone listening, our episode will actually come out after this goes live. So just in case they go looking for it.
No worries. Stay tuned. Yeah, I told Stuart, I'll give you guys a little like backstage knowledge from when I was on his show. Because of it being OCD Awareness Month, and it usually, I'm guessing, both Stuart and I tend to batch record so that we can edit around our work-life balance, etc. And I had confirmed that Stuart was coming on the show, but we had not recorded yet, which is very rare that I'm recording close enough in time to when it publishes. Mm-hmm. And I always do a little intro outro that is current. But I put out for the community, hey, Stuart's coming on at this last week of OCD Awareness Month. And that was a bit of an exposure for me because I had not recorded yet. And I don't do that. I don't put the cart before the horse. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to wait till I know I have things in because... life happens, and God forbid there's an emergency of some sort and it doesn't happen, but I just, I let it go and I let it out. So yes, our episode will be out later, but we talked about ICBT and ERP, and I've been a big fan of learning about ICBT. I know you've had Mike Hetty on the show too. It's interesting because my whole trajectory of learning ICBT is caught on tape because I was doing the podcast along the way. And so I very much started out very foundationally with this podcast for ERP, just because that's what it was here in the States. It was ERP or nothing. And I love ERP. That's no shade on ERP. But what I've also loved learning about is there's options. Options.
Yeah, you gotta stay open-minded.
Yes, yes. So I think, you know, that's probably a beautiful place for us to wrap up because, yeah, stay open-minded. Even if it's you, family, that is sitting there looking at your warrior suffering and you're like, gosh, I don't know if it can be better than this. Stay open-minded. because there is hope. Stuart was sitting on the end of the bed going, oh, if life is going to suck, then at least maybe I can help somebody else. And now look where he is. Mm. We all have our different roads and trajectories. And just because maybe you see somebody at this point in their journey doesn't mean they weren't in the trenches at some point along the way. And there is so much hope available through treatment options, through community, through these friendships and connections, like you said, even for your campers that will now even travel still together or stay connected in these ways because they built these bonds. Like, we're not in this alone. We're not in it alone. And so even Stuart across the pond and I can sit and chit chat and go, you know what? We're not alone. We weren't alone as people with our own lived experience. Our clients aren't alone. And you, listeners, are not alone. And so that is a beautiful thing. Stay open-minded. And you know what? Thank you so much, Stuart, for taking the time out of a very busy day, a busy week, and hanging with the fam here, because I think it's so helpful. And so many people look up to you and go, how did he create this? This is amazing. And so thank you for sharing the process along the way with us.
No, my pleasure. Thank you for having me. And thanks to everyone for listening.
Yeah, absolutely.
Intrusive thoughts.
Oh, family, what a great conversation. Oh, my goodness. And what a fantastic way to wrap up OCD Awareness Month. I mean, not only was the closing thought of keeping an open mind really helpful for today's discussion, but it's such a helpful reminder for OCD awareness at large. I mean, OCD is notorious for wanting to limit uncertainty and know how every little thing might go because these sticky obsessions and debilitating compulsions have to have its way. But keeping an open mind versus wrestling with these ideas, like Stuart mentioned earlier, or handling them, as Dr. Pia Callison mentioned last week, or recognizing that we're reacting to a whole host of imagined possibilities from an ICBT perspective, or behaving in a way that is reinforcing this learning from an ERP perspective, that open mind can and has led many of us with lived experience to a place of freedom. So if anything, that open mind is everything, family, because there is hope. So for today's intrusive thought segment, which for newer fam is my application segment of the show, I want to first again thank Stuart because he did an incredibly brave thing in one, not giving up, even when he feared and struggled through the pain and the fear through BDD, but also number two, for pressing record. Stuart could have easily sat at the end of his bed that day, said this sucks, and just mustered the courage to get through that day, period. And there would have been no judgment from us if that was all he did, because that in and of itself even takes courage. But because he was willing to say it publicly and create a space for others to share their stories publicly, now we have this invaluable resource. So it's not hard to see why Stu ended up receiving that Hero Award in 2018 by the IOCDF. It is heroic, but also, like Stuart and I discussed just a few moments ago, heroism, specifically when it comes in the form of advocacy, can take many forms. So I want to challenge each and everyone listening to do something brave today, because bravery is a sacred form of self-advocacy that we can do for ourselves. And it creates a foundation for greater advocacy. So for listeners with experience in ERP, you might be like, hey, this is already my homework for this week and every week. Because, you know, it takes all of that to work through your hierarchies, and you're not wrong. For some, it may be a plan to unmask your OCD a bit more. Perhaps share about your struggle, whether with a family member or a therapist or another safe and trusted confidant. For some, might be getting out of bed, or even perching on the end of it to face another day. Bravery can take so many forms, family. And for folks that are willing, I'm going to encourage you to do your brave thing and then, get this, write it down. Because I think speaking, writing, saying our truth, and really externalizing it is a powerful practice. And TBH, that's to be honest, for some of our older crew, the therapist in me tends to find this simple practice, like writing something down, can be really positively reinforcing. So I'm adding an example that I use sometimes in therapy with clients, but hey, I've given them to coworkers and friends when I've caught them in the act of being brave. I've even written them out for myself because we all need a reminder from time to time that we did something brave. So you are welcome to jump on over to this episode's blog at OCDFamilyPodcast.com and check out my example of a bravery ticket for you to download for your own use and your family, your practice, whatever helps. Personally, just gonna say, just strategy, big picture idea, but I like saving up these tickets for prizes because all this hard work is work. So treat yourself because you're worth it and we're worth it and we are better together. So what's your brave thing today? Getting out of bed? Maybe listening to that episode on medication and wondering, might this help me? Starting therapy? Graduating therapy? Reading a book? Writing a book? Bravery varies, and it gets to be as unique as we are. So honor that, family, and I hope to be with you again next week. Thank you for joining me and our OCD family community. If you enjoyed what you heard today, please like and subscribe to the OCD Family Podcast wherever you enjoy your podcasts. Did you find this content helpful? Please consider leaving a review. The more people that know they're not alone, the better. For more information regarding today's podcast, please visit OCDFamilyPodcast.com and remember to join the email list while you're there. It will provide you with the most up-to-date information, resources, and the download on the family chatter. Oh yeah, nothing says family like Stuart, Ralph, and me dishing about OCD. That's right, I went there. And you can too at OCDFamilyPodcast.com.
Are your clients struggling with disgust-based contamination OCD? Have you tried upgrading your ERP with the Mastery approach? Visit OCDFamilyPodcast.com/courses and click on my link because I've got just the training for you. At OCDFamilyPodcast.com/courses, you can check out OCD Training School's entire catalog of courses, including Rich Gallagher's course, Treating Contamination OCD. Where else can you build mastery over disgust-based triggers while supporting the fam at no extra cost to you? It's a win-win at OCDFamilyPodcast.com/courses.